The Story of the Last Days and Burial of the Reverend J. Hudson Taylor. Picking up on the second chapter, Letter from Mrs. Hudson Taylor to Theodore Howard, Esquire, containing the story of Mr. Hudson Taylor's last days. China Inland Mission, Qin-Kiang, on the Yangtze River, Thursday, June 8, 1905. My dear Mr. Howard, alone in this quiet spot beside the simple casket containing all the remains of us of the beloved one now with the Lord, my heart turns to you and many others at home who will be sorrowing yet rejoicing with us at this time. Only 10 months has passed since we were writing from Switzerland to tell you of the homegoing of dear Mrs. Hudson Taylor. And now from far off China, just 7 weeks after his arrival, Father has been taken to rejoin her and the rest that remains for the people of God. He was weary, very weary, and his work was done. Last Saturday evening, the third instruct, between 8 and 9 o'clock, the call came unexpectedly, and he was not, for God took him. The room was still and fair. Through open windows, the cool breeze comes stealing and sunshine falls on a very garden of flowers. Surely this is not death. He is gone from us, we know it, and deeply, deeply do we feel the bereavement his absence brings. But life it is that has come suddenly into our midst, not death. He was caught away from us. He did not seem to die. In every detail then and since, death has been so robbed of its terrors that we look up rather than into the grave and cry instantly, my father, the chariots of Israel and the horsemen thereof. CIM Home, Shanghai, June 11, 1905. But let me tell you from the beginning. We landed in Shanghai on Monday afternoon, the 17th of April, and there received here at the headquarters of our mission, with a welcome that cannot be described, dear Mr. and Mrs. Hoist and Mr. Stevenson, Miss Murr, and the ladies in charge of the home had done everything that could be thought of to make us feel the love with which dear Father's return was greeted. And there were piles of letters and precious gifts from friends in inland stations, eloquent of the rejoicing that filled many hearts. Our stay in Shanghai was short, for Father was anxious to go up the river without delay. But he had the pleasure of seeing most of the members of the China Council, as the April sittings were just concluded and the brethren had remained on to meet him. And so once more, and for the last time, his voice was heard among them in loving, helpful counsel and in prayer. A photograph taken a day after our arrival of the group of 12, including Father and another of Mr. Stevenson and Mr. Meadows with him alone, the three who were in China before the sailing of the Latimer, are very precious now. We left for Qin-Kiang on Wednesday night by one of the New River steamers and arrived 24 hours later to find Dr. Cox and my dear brother waiting for us. Footnote, Dr. Whitfield Guinness, end of footnote. I must not attempt to tell of the happy days spent in the mission home there, a real home to so many, nor of Easter Sunday with Miss Murray at Yang-Chau, footnote, the home in which our ladies began the study of the language on their arrival in China, end of footnote, not far away. Both these were centers of special interest to Father, the scene of so much foundation laying in joy and sorrow, labor and suffering, in years gone by. Under the shadow of the green hills at Qin-Kiang, close by the river, lies the little cemetery in which my husband's mother, footnote, the first Mrs. Hudson Taylor, end of footnote, was laid to rest 35 years ago. Dear Father went once or twice to visit her grave and was pleased to see it so well cared for amidst the trees and greenery that have grown up around it in that beautiful God's acre. On Easter Monday, we left for Hankow, 4 days' journey upriver, arriving before breakfast on the 28th of April. Early though it was, Mr. Lewis Jones was on the hall to meet us, and the welcome we received at the missionary home was worthy of warm Welsh hearts and hospitality. By this time, our faces were definitely set towards the providence of HO-NAN. Father, having decided that he would, at any rate, visit the stations on and near the new railway. So our stay at Hankow was the briefest. Short though it was, we were almost overwhelmed by the kindness of friends, new and old, in the great center. Dr. Griffin John came repeatedly to see dear father, and Dr. Martin of the Imperial University, though several years his senior, made light of the long journey across the river that he might visit his old friend. While they were together one day talking over the news that had just reached us of the death of Dr. Etkins, the question came up as to who was now the oldest missionary in China, and it was interesting to discover that Dr. Martin has the longest record of service in this land, and that Father and Dr. John come next. Footnote: though not just now in China, there are two other missionaries who are contemporaries with these three. The list of seniors actually stands as follows. Reverend R. Lecher, that's Lecher, arrived in 1847. Dr. W.A.P. Martin, 1850. Dr. W. Ashmore, 1851. Reverend J.H. Taylor, 1854. Dr. Griffin John, 1855. End of the footnote. It seemed a pity to lose the opportunity of having their photographs taken together. So although the weather was dull and cloudy, the photographer was sent for, and a fairly satisfactory result obtained. Aided by Mr. and Mrs. Lewis Jones, who provided us with bedding, washing apparatus, food baskets, etc., we set out on Monday, the 1st of May, for the strangest and in some way the most interesting journey we have ever taken in inland China. 240 miles by rail into the province of HO-NAM. Once before, on just such a May morning, we left Hankow 11 years ago on the same journey northward. But then it was by wheelbarrow, and many a weary day had to be endured ere we could reach our destination. Now a distance that took us 2 weeks to traverse can be accomplished in 24 hours, and with less weariness than 1 hour of the old sort of traveling involved. It is a wonderful change, and all day long, as we guided swiftly over the iron road, we felt as in a dream, from which there must be a rude awakening. But no, it went on and on, fresh surprises surrounding us at every point, until only 6 hours after leaving Hankow, we steamed slowly through the long tunnel, under the mountains that divided HU-PEH from HO-NAN, and found ourselves actually within the borders of our old providence. It was so interesting at all the wayside stations to notice the pleasure the sight of dear father called forth. Whenever he appeared at the window or on the platform, young and old seemed drawn towards him with looks of sympathy and kindness that made even the dullest faces attractive. It is rarely, of course, that a foreigner of his years is to be seen traveling in inland China, and the characteristic reverence of the people of old age immediately showed itself in the smiling interest with which they watched his every movement. Everywhere people seemed anxious to show him attention. The railway officials gladly arranged for us to sleep on the train at night to save the trouble of going to an inn. And all along the way, he was the center of attraction. About 10 o'clock on Tuesday morning, the 2nd of May, the train drew up at the busy station of Yen-Cheng, and we found Mr. Lack on the platform waiting to meet us. Two carts were in readiness to take us to the mission house, and as we left the train behind and rumbled over the rough, uneven roads between the city, we began to realize that we were actually back in HO-NAN once more. And oh, the joy of being there again amongst the people we have known and loved so well. Every moment was a feast to our hearts. The mission house we found to be a most attractive place, with bright, airy rooms and a home-like atmosphere due to Mr. and Mrs. Lack's delightful hospitality. That night, several of the missionaries from other stations arrived on their way back from a conference in the neighboring city of HSIANG-CHENG and then HESIEN. The following day was spent in long and interesting conversations in which we learned a great deal about the development of the work since we had left the Providence. Most cordial invitations were given to dear Father to visit all stations to which their dear friends were returning. And after thought and prayer, he decided to go on at any rate to HESIANG-CHENG, then HSIEN, another 2 days' journey. This for him was a somewhat serious undertaking, as the railway could only take us half the distance, and the rest of the way we should be dependent on native methods of travel. Mr. Joyce, however, kindly met us at the station, and we found he had bought a comfortable sedan chair for our dear father to ride in, as well as two cars for ourselves and the luggage. That night, of course, had to be spent in a Chinese inn, and I wish I could describe to you the strangeness and yet familiarity of it all. We made dear father, as comfortable as we could, and though he was very weary, he seemed to enjoy his Chinese supper and arrangements, and was full of interest in those who thronged about us and listened for an hour or two to the gospel. After he had gone to rest, and we too had retired for the night, a touching little incident happened that we did not hear of until the morning. Mr. Joyce, in the next room to ours, was awakened between 10 and 11 o'clock by someone outside the window calling him. Drowsy and tired, he thought it could hardly be time to get up yet, and was relieved to find that it was only a visitor asking to see us. He went to the window and found one of his own church members, a Christian man from a neighboring village, who had heard of our being at the inn that night, and had come over after his long day's work to pay his respect to Father. Mr. Joyce explained to him that the venerable pastor was now sleeping, and after his trying journey, it would never do to disturb him with midnight visitors. The good man saw the reasonableness of this, and, though much disappointed, said he would try to come in on Sunday to see him at the mission station. Then he began to fumble with something he was carrying, and pushed a little bundle through the paper window. "Why, what is this?" said Mr. Joyce, surprised. "Oh, it is nothing. It is only my poor little meaning," he answered quickly. "It is my duty to provide for the venerable pastor while he is near our village." And Mr. Joyce found thrust into his hand a string of 200 cash, money that the dear man had brought to meet Father's expenses at the inn. And then he had given it, he slipped away quietly, leaving us all to rest. We were so sorry in the morning that we had not seen him, but on the following Sunday he came to the services, and Father had an opportunity of thanking him in person. That Sunday, at HSIANG-CHENG, and the days before and after it, I must not dwell on, they were full of happy fellowship with dear Mr. and Mrs. Joyce and their co-workers, Miss Soltau and Miss Morris, and with the native Christians. There and at all the stations in HO-NAM, great advice had been made since the Boxer Trouble. Great advance has been made since the Boxer Trouble. And there was much to talk over in connection with the work. Heavy rains prevented our leaving as soon as we expected, and as the river rose hour by hour below the windows of the mission house, Father was encouraged to think of the returning to YEN-CHENG by water instead of going overland as we had come. And so when the stream was at its height, we set out on a large cargo boat to travel with the current down to the railway again. Mr. and Mrs. Joyce were badly in need of a rest, and to our great satisfaction they came with us, bringing their servants and dear little children, and undertaking all arrangements. It was a delightful journey, so much so that when we reached YEN-CHENG, On the second day, Father was quite prepared to go on with the Joyces to CHOU-CHIA-KOU, and perhaps beyond. We had been much in prayer about this, for our own two stations in which we had worked before leaving China lay on the further side of that city, and we longed, of course, to meet the dear Christians again. It was just the step at a time. We could hardly decide more than one day ahead as to what would be possible. But little by little, the Lord gave dear Father strength and opened the way before us, so that instead of only spending a week or so in HO-NAN, in the places near the railway, we were 25 days in the Providence, visiting five of the central stations and meeting the missionaries from as many others. At the three stations in which we ourselves had previously worked, the Christians gathered in large numbers, and the welcome accorded us was specially enthusiastic and touching. Many of them had been reading the story of our Father's life from a retrospect, recently translated by Mr. Baller, and they could not do enough to express their love and veneration. Sunday, the 14th of May, was spent at CHOU-CHIA-KOU, and there dear Father preached a sermon 2 miles long, and one that I am sure the Christians will never forget. It came about in this way. The church building in which the services were held on Sunday is at a considerable distance from the mission house, where we were entertained by Mr. and Mrs. Brock, and the question arose as to how Father was to get there that hot summer morning. It was a walk of fully a mile through the city. But a simple solution was suggested. Had not Miss Leggett, that's L-E-G-G-A-T, and Mrs. Talbot sent in a sedan chair with 8 bearers from the neighboring station in view of a visit we hoped to pay them on Monday, and were not the men even now in the house with nothing to do? Let them be called and make ready. But no, Father would not hear of it. Not to put such an example before the native Christians, had he come to HO-NAN. If it were necessary for him to go to church on Sunday morning, he could walk. And walk he did, the whole way there and back. My husband took a little chair with him, and when Father was too tired to go further, he sat down just where he was, in the busy street, and the crowds gathered about him. TSA, PUH, K-IH, IH, KO, KIAO, LAI, they exclaimed. Why do you not bring a sedan chair for the venerable gentleman? And then Howard explained to them, and Mr. Jones on the return journey, that it was the Lord's day of rest, and that the will of God was that all men should keep it holy, and that though there was a sedan chair in the house with 8 bearers, the old missionary would not consent to use it on that account. And from that text, several discourses were delivered to interested onlookers here and there along the crowded street. But next day the chair was used and proved very helpful in carrying dear Father over the 20 miles of rough roads to the neighboring city. Oh, that familiar road, how often we had traveled it. Every tree and house looked just as we had seen them scores of times, until we neared our destination. And then something very unusual arrested our attention. Right in front of us on the main highway, a crowd of men and boys had gathered, and as they stood there in the sunlight, several bright, gleaming objects held up in their hands puzzled us not a little. They looked like the large instruments of a brass band, but surely they could hardly be, and then in a moment it flashes upon us. They were the Christians from CHEN-CHAU, who had come out to meet us. The table we now saw was spread with refreshments for dear Father on his journey. The glittering objects shining in the sun were 4 golden characters held up to greet him, the motto to be fixed on a banner they were probably preparing to present when he arrived, and so it proved. For in a few minutes they were all about us, the love and enthusiasm of their welcome defined description. When we had time to look at the beautiful characters, we found to our surprise the 4 words, NUI-TI, EN-REN. Their own greeting to dear father, literally translated, Inland China's Grace Man, or Benefactor of Inland China. A little further on, a group of women, Christians, met us, and when we reached the house inside the city, we found the whole country yard, the whole courtyard, covered in and decorated with red hangings, a broad platform arranged at one end, draped in red, and welcome written large on everything. When the red satin banner was hung over the platform, with its gold-covered characters, and the crowd of smiling, happy, hearty friends trooped in for the afternoon meeting, filling every corner to overflowing, it was a beautiful sight, and one not soon to be forgotten. Oh, the happy days there, how they lived in our hearts. Dear Father was much among the Christians and spoke to them once or twice. At a Christian Endeavor meeting, we were all presented with charming little silver badges and enrolled as members of the CHEN-CHAU branch. Father was very pleased with the way in which it was all done and wore the sign of membership on his coat right on to the end. At TAI-KANG, the last station we visited, the same love and lavish kindness were displayed. Some of the Christians hired a cart and came to CHEN-CHAU, a whole day's journey to meet us. On the way, they passed a letter carrier who said that Father was not well and that he certainly would have to turn back to CHOU-CHIA-KOU without visiting their city. Upon this, the TAI-KANG friends were greatly distressed and stopped in the middle of the road to pray that the Lord would strengthen him and help him to undertake the journey. O Lord, what have we done, they said, that the venerable pastor should come thousands of miles from the other side of the world, and after months of traveling stop short just one day's journey from our city. O Lord, we too are his little children. Help him to come on and visit us. What was this their joy a few hours later, when they reached CHEN-CHAU, to find a baptismal service in progress, and Father taking part and addressing the newly received believers, and to hear that he had already made up his mind to go on to TAI-KANG the next day. What a journey that was in their escort between the two stations. KUO-LAO-SIANG, a very great heart, bore us along in triumph, insisting on paying himself all expenses by the way, and delighted us hour by hour by the wonderful story of all that the Lord had done for the TAI-KANG church since we left there 7 years ago, and especially during the troubles of 1900. Outside the city gate, the Christians met us with Mr. Ford and Mr. Bird, the missionaries. Mr. and Mrs. Joyce had arrived already, so we were a large party at the mission house. Old friends and fellow workers reunited after long years. With hearts full of thankfulness, we talked over early experiences, hopes, and prayers, how the Lord protected us there in the terrible riot of 1896, and how he has blessed and increased the work, especially since 1900. Time fails to tell of this happy day spent at TAI-KANG, of the meetings with Native Christians, the beautiful banner they too presented to dear Father, the return journey all the way to YEN-CHENG, and much besides. One meeting at CHOU-CHIA-KOU, however, must be mentioned. We found ourselves there on a Sunday, on our way back, as it happened, for the Sunday, the 21st of May, the Christians came to know that it was Father's birthday, and to our surprise, they prepared a beautiful scarlet satin banner to present to him, bearing the inscription, O man greatly beloved. He was not well enough for the long walk to church that day, so they all gathered at the mission house for an afternoon meeting. Numbers had come in from the country and from the distant outstations, so that there were a dozen or more of the leading Christian men present from all over the district. One after another they rose to make little addresses to dear Father, full of love and tenderness, some of them very heart-moving. He spoke to them, too, for a few minutes. The next day, we left by boat for YEN-CHENG, and after 3 days' 3 quiet days in the river, we passed under the railway bridge outside the city and felt ourselves in touch with the Western world once more. The following step was easy. 24 hours on the train back to Hankow. It was a beautiful journey, made all the more so by the companionship of a dear fellow worker who joined us at YEN-CHANG on our way to the coast, Miss J. and an A.F. Sandberg, whose friends and home in Sweden some of us know so well. It was Friday, the 26th of May, when we reached Hankow, the 39th anniversary of the sailing of the Latimer party, and thus the day on which we entered the 40th year of the mission's history. In the train on the way down, we had some previous times of prayer together and were very conscious of the presence of the Lord. Full of thankfulness for all his goodness during the 3.5 weeks of our absence in Hanna, that's H-O-N-A-N, we look to him for renewed strength and for his own guidance as to the next stage of our journey. And oh, how tender was his watchful care over every step of our little way that remained. Only 8 days were left of our dear Father's earthly pilgrimage, 5 days in May and 3 in June, and then the far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. If only we had known, but he knew, he was planning all. In ways I must not dwell on now, dear Father was led to reconsider the decision he had arrived at against going to HU-NAN and was given strength and courage to undertake the journey. Saturday, Sunday, and Monday were spent in Hankow, happy, restful days in which he saw many old friends. One afternoon he took tea with Dr. Griffin John in the London Mission House and enjoyed the beautiful Welsh hymns our dear host and his daughter sang to us, especially that glorious song of praise, D-I-O-L-C-H, and then I-D-D-O. It was a beautiful thing to see the old missionary, after almost 50 years in China, singing with all the fire of youth, the hymns of his fatherland and childhood, words and music that are now moving hearts the wide world over. It was decided by this time that we should leave for CHANG-SHA, the capital of HU-NAN, on Tuesday, and Dr. John was much interested in the journey. We were a party of 5, for my brother had joined us at Hankow, and Father had persuaded Miss A.F. and then Sandberg to continue with us. Our passages were taken by one of the Japanese steamers, and as Father seemed so much better than he had been, we felt it right to engage Chinese accommodations rather than more expensive European first-class cabins. But at this point, an unlooked-for providence intervened. It was the last journey dear Father was to take in China. The days were very hot and the nights trying. It was to be made as cool and comfortable for him as possible. To our surprise, a wire was received saying that the Chinese steamer had run aground in the Tongting Lake and that it was quite uncertain as to when she would reach Hankow. The only thing to be done was to go by the China Navigation Company steamer, sailing that same evening, and then, and even then, waiting off the shore. But it had to be by saloon accommodations, as they do not issue tickets to foreigners traveling Chinese style. There was no help for it, and with a clear conscience, the change was made. When we went on board that evening, it was to find a beautiful new boat, the best on the upper river, the kindest of captains and officers in charge, and the whole European accommodations reserved for ourselves. We were the only foreign passengers on board. Nothing could have made the journey more delightful. These 2 days spent with Captain Hunter on the S-H-A-S-I will ever live in our hearts. Dear Father was just himself, and though the weather was instantly hot, he enjoyed the cool saloon, the comfortable chairs on deck, and the free breezes. It was a joy to him to have us all with him, to see the friendship between the younger members of our party deepening into the blessed relationship they have entered upon now. And last but not least, it was the fulfillment of the prayers and longings of a lifetime to see with his own eyes the noble providence closed so long, now at length thrown widely open to the gospel. As one crossed the Great Lake and steamed up the river, passing well-built cities, beautiful pagodas and temples, rich plains covered with ripening crops and noble mountain ranges near and distant, one could not but think of all the toil and prayers of years gone by, of buried lives and dauntless faith, richly rewarded now in the wonderful change that is coming over the hearts and minds of the people. Until 8 years ago, there was not one resident Protestant missionary in the whole province. None had been able to gain a footing. Now there are no fewer than 111 missionaries connected with 13 societies working in 17 central stations, aided by a noble band of native helpers. It was Thursday afternoon, the 1st of June, when we reached the capital and were welcomed by our dear friends, Dr. and Mrs. Keller and Dr. Bari, that's B-A-R-R-I-E, to C-H-A-N-G-S-H-A. 20 minutes in chairs through the busy streets brought us to the mission house, in which we already felt quite at home, having carefully studied Mr. Harlan Beach's delightful article in a recent number of Chinese Millions. Footnote. See The Church in the House by Mr. H-A-R-L-A-N P. Beach in China's Millions for April 1905. Another footnote. Mrs. J. and then A.F. Sandenberg and Dr. Whitfield Guinness were engaged a few days later. End of footnote. Ending Chapter 2, Part 1.